Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, as we kind of reposition the mic here. And I had initially planned to record yesterday, and it was the bride's birthday. And the day kind of got away from me, and then I said, well, I'll just record after the show. Went to the movies yesterday, and I got home and ended up with a migraine headache. And so we are going today. We'll also go tomorrow and be back on schedule for Friday. So I do apologize. But I got home from the show, and it was just one. I had to go grab some ibuprofen, just kind of lay down with no lights on, that kind of stuff. Next thing you know, your good friend and host is kind of fading away. And so we're back, just kind of dealing with a little bit of a halo deal. If you've had a migraine, you know, I get them about once a year. I never can pinpoint what that is, but nevertheless, here we are. I did go see the Joker yesterday. That was part of the birthday celebration, and I loved the first Joker movie. Loved it. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen. The new Joker is good. It's not as good as the first one. And of course, they've got Lady Gaga as part of this. And so it's basically, in some respects, a musical. And I enjoyed some of that, but it got a little bit of annoying. You know, be some dramatic scene coming up and we would break in the song. And so it's a little different. It does bring kind of a conclusion to the Joker franchise, I suspect. But yeah, it's good. It was entertaining. It was worth seeing. But it's not as good as the first one. And it rarely is, right? I mean, when you think about these sequels, a lot of times it's like, hey, we made a ton of money. Let's go back to the well and see if we can't make some more. It's good business, right? But yeah, I enjoyed it. Enjoyed having a chance spending time with the wife. I'm a firm believer in this, guys. You know, maybe you disagree, but I think you always make a big deal about her birthday, even when she says not to. Just that's my feeling when I see these young men get engaged and they share it on Facebook. There are a couple things that I tell them. Is tell her that you love her and she's beautiful every single day, without fail, and make a big deal about her birthday. Even when she says not to. Now, I didn't go crazy, you know. Didn't go crazy, but, you know, she spends a lot of hours up at that spa taking care of people. I spend a lot of hours covering Mississippi State, and so sometimes you got to show people that they're more important to you than the things that keep you busy. And so it was part of the deal. Now, one of the things that I'll share with you, too, because I can opine about this for a long time. And I think there are some dangerous things that get put out, you know, on social media. And I don't mean the misinformation. I guess in some respects, this kind of qualifies as misinformation. But take it from your good friend and host. There are a lot of people out there. Of course, I deal with a lot of people in recovery. And I can tell you that most people, I would say the overwhelming majority of people, put their best foot forward on social media. And there are so many people out there that represent a standard of living that is fantastical. I mean, and you see it in movies and TV shows and things like that. I mean, it's like they show you that all these people with very limited education and who are fatally flawed in many respects are living some incredible life that is unsustainable. Right? And it's unattainable for many people. It's the whole comparison thing, right? You start comparing your life to something you see in TVs and movies or what somebody else promotes on social media, and you start feeling worse about your own existence. It's like, well, I work hard and I do all this stuff. Why don't I have these things? Well, they don't either. Very few of them do, right? It's kind of like that. I saw an interview recently with Chris Cornell, and if you know anything about me, you know what a huge Chris Cornell fan I remain to be, even though he is no longer with us. But he made mention You know, it's like, hey, you look back in the 80s and you see like a Whitesnake video and you see all these handsome people that are incredibly talented and, you know, they're driving these exotic sports cars and, you know, living on the beach in Malibu, California. And for a while they were, right? And I think a lot of people just looked at that and said, there's just no way I can do that. Whether I be a musician or whatever, I just can't do that. And so I think in many respects, the grunge movement in many respects was kind of the anti-hero thing, right? It's like, well, you know, these guys look like me. You know, they sound like me. And many of them, you know, I joke with some of my friends that are Nirvana fans. You know, I said, one of the unique things about Nirvana is the songs are never played the same way twice. It's true. If you ever see that live footage, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But that's the beauty of it all. But my advice to you today, my beloved listener, is to live your life and not live it in a comparison way. Don't look at everybody else and say, hey, because I can tell you that some of the people that I know that put together such a polished and well-packaged social media dressed up accounting of their life are not truly living that life. There are a lot of people out there, and some of which you know, and many of which you love, that are dealing with some very difficult things, and we don't always advertise our pain and our suffering on social media, nor should we. But I think in many respects, when we're not fully honest with each other, it kind of paints a picture that perhaps we're living a life that is above our means and above our station, and in many respects, maybe above our standing in life. And I don't mean from a financial standpoint. I mean from a spiritual and fundamental standpoint. You know, it's important to understand that because sometimes we're comparing ourselves to an ideal that is non-existent. And so live your life. Work as hard as you possibly can. Be the best you can possibly be. And the good Lord will bless your labor. And the thing that I have learned, and we'll stop preaching here in a second. The thing that I have learned about that aspect of it is that great things happen to me when I work hard. But God is not going to give me less than I deserve or less than I need. And in addition to that, too, he's not going to give me more than I can handle. Because I have been a person that sometimes in my life, you know, when I've been extremely successful, that, you know, I kind of forget, right? You know, what it's like to struggle. And kind of went through that yesterday. You know, be it Dana's birthday. I mean, the first birthday that she spent with me was she turned 22. And we got engaged at a surprise birthday party the first time that we had, we were together on October 7th. And so I didn't have anything. I mean, all I had to offer her was my love. You know, I started waiting tables. And there was sometimes I was so broke I had to walk to work. You know, just down the street. I lived on West Pine Street there in Hattiesburg and worked at Austin's on Broadway. And I'd walk to work and was grateful to come home, you know, 60, 70 bucks in my pocket after a day's work. I remember if we ever hit 100, our rent at the time was 295 bucks a month. That was our rent. And if I could come home on a Saturday with 100 bucks in my pocket, I feel like I had really done well. And now I look around, you know, we own a couple businesses, and, you know, I don't think I'm any happier in that respect. You know what I'm saying? It's like I don't think happiness is kind of quantified by that. I mean, I believe the David Lee Roth adage that says, you know, money can't buy happiness, but sometimes it can pay off unhappiness for a while. And there's some truth in that. But everywhere I've been in my life, and I believe it was William Shakespeare that wrote, "Wherefore I am, I shall be content." That's kind of the way I look at things. And I don't covet what other people have. I mean, there's some opportunities out there, maybe some awards and things like that I'd love to have. But if I don't have them, I won't live my life feeling like it has been unfulfilled. Because I think about these things when I take my own personal inventory. I'm married the prettiest girl I ever dated. I have four amazing children. I have two grand girls that are just the apple of my eye. And I get to cover Mississippi State for a living, 365 days a year. What in the world do I ever have to complain about? You know, I mean, sure. I'd love to have a few more subscribers. We'd love to have some more floaters, you know, things like that. But the reality of it is I'm just living life on life's terms. And, I didn't plan to chase this rabbit trail today, but I think it's important because you never know who needs to hear this. But there's so many people out there that are kind of portraying themselves in a light that is non-existent. And it's important for us just to focus on ourselves, not go out there chasing the McCoys, right? You know, go out there. We can't worry about that aspect of it. You got to go out there and live your life as best you can. And speaking of living life, you can live life large at Bulldog Burger Company. Go in, put your feet under their table. Let them take care of everything, right? You remember in COVID, we were like, I can't wait to be able to go out to eat again and live a life of regularity. Well, you have that opportunity. Let's not forget from whence we've come. And I remember the great job they did, you know, packaging those to-go orders, you know, making me feel like I had a little something, right? And so much of that's important in life. It's a great service you get from Bulldog Burger Company. It's not just a great meal. It's a great company. You're supporting a great group of people. I'm a firm believer in doing that. But you want to get entertained. You want to get nourished. You want to get taken care of. You're going to get that at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. And choose one of those great restaurant quality hamburgers. Again, I'm still on the smokehouse kick. I kind of ride those waves for a while, but I'm like, hey, I'll try this, I'll try that. You know, and there's always something new. There was always some specials that always kind of intrigued me. So I want to try them because I have the FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. I can't let you guys have something that I don't have when it comes to the Bulldog Burger Company experience. So go check them out today. You'll be glad you did. Whether it's a night out with friends or family, maybe it's work colleagues, maybe it's a business meeting. I've had several like luncheons there with people passing through town looking to do business. And I always feel like I want to represent myself well, so I'm going to take them somewhere that's going to do a great job. That's Bulldog Burger Company. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, we're a day late, so forgive me. But let's take a look back at the weekend that was. And what a wild weekend it was, man. That's one of the reasons that we love college football. Because you have to expect the unexpected. The chalk, basically, disintegrated on Saturday. We've got to start with this Alabama and Vanderbilt game. We talked about that. You know what's so funny is I almost picked Vandy to cover, but I never thought they would win. I thought, you know what? Alabama has a big win over Georgia. You know, it's going to be a task to get up to go play Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt's at home. And Vanderbilt's been somewhat more competitive. I almost talked myself into picking Vandy to cover. But never in a million years did I think they would win. As we discussed last week on Friday's show, they hadn't beaten Alabama since 1984. As I tweeted out, in case you missed it, the number one song in America the last time that Vanderbilt beat Alabama was Let's Go Crazy, the lead track on the absolutely classic Prince album, Purple Rain. That's a long time ago. 40 years, man. It's tough. I mean, the children of Israel marched in the wilderness for 40 years. You begin to kind of put that in context. But, man, how incredible was Vanderbilt? And the play calling in this game was next level. And our friend Barton Simmons, that used to work for 247, you know, works there. Director of Player Personnel, I believe, is his title. But he's involved with recruiting and things of that nature. And I text him. And I was like, dude, congratulations. I said, you will never not tell this story. You'll be telling this story about beating number one Alabama the rest of your life. Not just to your friends and colleagues, but your grandchildren. Climb on up here, kids. You know, Papa Barton's going to tell you the story about the time we beat the number one team in the country. Right? I mean, begin to think about those moments and what those mean to those coaches and players. And And all of a sudden, there's some players out there we've been recruiting against them. And let's be honest about that. I mean, our relationships are going to be really, 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 really tested. You know, think about Austin Howard. You know, a guy that flipped from Vanderbilt to Mississippi State. You know, those are things you got to think about. Everything matters, man. Everything matters. But I just thought offensively, Vanderbilt had Alabama guessing over and over and over. I mean, you put up 40 points, man, and this was nothing fluky about this. Like, every time that Alabama answered, Vanderbilt's like, nope, you're not. We're done. We're done. Incredible, incredible game. Some turnovers were big in this ball game. The strip sack fumble recovery on the Milroe deal was big. That was really, really, really big. But congratulations to Vanderbilt. Now 3-2 as we approach the halfway point in the year. And now you start looking at this thing and you start wondering to yourself, you know, we thought Vanderbilt might win 2 or 3 games this year. Now you start asking yourself, when you look at the progress that these guys have made, is this a group that can get bowl eligible? You know, I don't know. I don't know. You know, and we'll talk about some of this tomorrow, but we'll preview the weekend, you know, on Friday. But they got to head to Lexington this weekend. Not going to sneak up on them. But, you know, is that a winnable game, you know, with Kentucky? I mean, I never know from 1 week to the next how Kentucky's going to play. Well, then you get Ball State in Nashville. And all of a sudden you start thinking, well, you know, Ball State, from the MAC, how good are they doing this year? They're 1-4. So that's a game Vanderbilt should win. Then you got to go to Auburn. Now, that's something earlier in the year we never even thought about. That could be a big game. Guys, that could be a big game for both of them. Then you host South Carolina. You're at LSU. And you got I skipped over Texas. And so the answer to the question in my mind, as we sit here today, and of course, the same guy that picked Alabama to beat Vanderbilt and cover. No, I don't think they're going to get bowl eligible. I think they may get 2. And maybe you get that 5-7 exemption because Vanderbilt will always be where they need to be from an academic standpoint. But yeah, I mean, let's not get crazy with it. I mean, again, you look at this and it's like, you know, maybe. I think in order to do it, they've probably got to find a way to knock off Kentucky. If they do, they keep the dream alive. Then all of a sudden it's like, hey, then you get Ball State coming in. Now you've won 3 in a row. You get to host Texas. You're not going to beat them. But then you start thinking, could you get Auburn or South Carolina? And I know we have some people that are affiliated and listen to Auburn football, and you know they love all that stuff. And they're thinking, is that become a toss-up game for us? Well, yes. Yes, it has. And let's talk, we'll get to that shortly, but let's talk about this crazy night in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I thought Arkansas would play this game close. I really did. I didn't think Arkansas would win. You know, it's, again, you're in Fayetteville, and you got some people up there kind of starting to believe a little bit. And you had Tennessee coming in. And Tennessee offensively has been elite, and Arkansas really, really gave them trouble. Held them scoreless. Did you watch this game? It was 3-0 at the break. And then all of a sudden, Tennessee comes out, they make some adjustments, they kind of begin to exert themselves a little bit, and you're like, okay, all right, they're fixing to put this thing away. But no, they don't. And next thing you know, you're going to the fourth quarter. It's a 14-10 ball game. And if you're Tennessee too, I don't care who you are, there's some frustration within your own huddle, whether you believe it or not. It's like, man, we just want to get out of here. And you kind of stop playing football. And you start playing the opponent a little bit. You know, and it's like there's a home crowd there that's starting to feel it. They said, hey, we just need a play. And then they get a play. And Arkansas outscores them 9-0 in the fourth quarter. And if you had told me Tennessee would only score 14 points on the road in Fayetteville, Arkansas, I don't know that I would have believed it. It'll be interesting to see what's going on with Green. Yeah, that was, it was a bit, you know, I don't know that it was malicious, but, you know, man, that was a questionable play, you know, going low there. I mean, it's just like, to me, it's as bad or worse than targeting. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you get a concussion, sometimes you're back the next week. I mean, you get a torn MCL or a torn meniscus, you're not back for a bit, you know. And listen, I get it's football. I understand it. But, man, that play seemed to be a little questionable. And you got to wonder, you know, when you got a running Green, a quarterback like Green, how does that impact him kind of moving forward? Sampson, 22 carries, 138 yards, and both touchdowns for Tennessee. If I had told you going into the ball game that Tennessee would not throw a touchdown pass in this ball game, you'd say Stevie probably lose. Well, he did. They did. Auburn and Georgia. I tell you, when I look at this Auburn team, and obviously Hugh Freeze and I have some history, but I'm just so curious to what has happened here. And I remember the comment, some things he said in press conferences that people have kind of, you know, kind of clipped and that kind of stuff and made a big deal about. The one that sticks with me is the one when Freeze said it, you know, we're ahead of where I expected to be. Yeah, I just don't know if I buy that. It's kind of like we can't wait to tell our story, you know. I think those are probably things you don't need to say when you're losing. It's where, you know, we're ahead of where I expected to be at this point. I think it's disingenuous. I just simply don't believe that. Now, let's look at you know, kind of what's happened here. Against Power 5 opponents this year, Auburn's 0-4, including the 31-13 loss at Georgia. And remember last year, Auburn should have beat Georgia. They should have. They didn't. And this year, you know, I just don't think Auburn, even though they're better at wide receiver, I don't know that you've got the athletes to match up with that Georgia defense, which is still elite. But, yeah, you get the open date here, and you start looking at, you know, where are the sure wins left on this schedule? Well, last week we'd have said Vanderbilt and UL Monroe. Well, you know, that gets you to 4. But I'm starting to look at this and really beginning to wonder, is Auburn going to be bowl eligible this year? You have to. So you got the open date. You got to go to Missouri. And Missouri was a top 10 team until A&M absolutely hit them in the mouth. But they're going to be playing in Como. And the toss-up game traditionally favors the home team. And that's one thing we talk about, too, is like, you know, whoever has the better quarterback. Well, I would say Brady Cook's better than Thorne. That's two things that really favor them, right? Who has a better quarterback? Where's the game being played? So you'd have to say right now as we sit here, you got to feel like Missouri's going to be favored to win that game. Then you got to go to Kentucky. It's a weird thing playing at Kentucky. And the South Carolina, Sam Beamer's kind of cracked the code a little bit. But would you pick Auburn and Kentucky? It's a toss-up game. But again, you know, it's Vandegrift turning the corner at quarterback. The game's in Lexington. You got to feel like Kentucky's probably favored. Then, okay, then Vanderbilt goes into Auburn. And you got to wonder, too. Like, if Auburn loses at Mizzou and at Kentucky, they would have got 6 losses. Now, they're going to be those that are, you know, true believers in Auburn football. They're going to be there. But probably not going to be a raucous crowd with Vanderbilt and UL Monroe coming in, you know, back-to-back games. They have the open date before UL Monroe. But it's so interesting to think about, you know, the psyche. What's the psyche of that fan base if you lose these next two? I mean, at worst, you've got to win one of them. You got to split. But that still makes you 3-5 with 4 to play. And one of those 4 is Alabama. Is the best you can hope for this year at Auburn 6-6? What happens if it's 5-7?
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Give the gift that everyone wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Save on USDA-certified tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, perfectly aged ribeyes, gourmet sides, and decadent desserts, delivered right to their door. Skip the stress. Order now at omahasteaks.com. That's omahasteaks.com, and use code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout to get an extra $35 off. Hurry, these deals won't last. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
There were so many people that said, you know what, we got to get Hugh Freeze back in the SEC. And, one of the things that I go back to, and it's not necessarily just about like Ole Miss or whatever, but, now that the NIL is legal, it makes me wonder, how are certain schools viewed and received on the recruiting trail? Because like there's a little psychology behind that too. It's like, if they'll cheat to get me, then maybe that's where I should go. All of a sudden that makes me feel special. Well, now if people don't have to cheat to get you, it's kind of a level playing field. And maybe you hadn't considered that. It's something that I've thought about before, It's like, it's amazing the money that's available now legally, but all these, there's still some dark money out there too, don't get me wrong. There's still some impermissible benefits out there. It's true. There's some housing stuff that's going on that shouldn't be. But all that understood, I really look at this Auburn team and I begin to wonder, what's going to happen. Now, a lot of discussions about, having to find a quarterback, and, Deuce Knight just committed, and, but it's a thing you start thinking about. Deuce will be there next year, but, you're going to play him as a true freshman. What can you expect in this league as a true freshman? You start thinking about next year. Cohen may have a decision to make out there. It's true. But, Georgia wins 31-13, and Carson Beck, very efficient for Georgia, 23 of 29 for 240 yards. They don't play a lot of vertical passing game like they did. But Beck, to me, is very talented, but he's really kind of more of a game manager in that respect. So he's going to make the smart play. But, we'll be headed there, and we'll talk more about Georgia tomorrow. But we'll be headed there this weekend. The Missouri and A&M game, I thought A&M would win. I never thought that Mizzou would get embarrassed the way they did. Guys, this game was over at halftime. It was 24-0 at the break, and I remember watching them walk off the field. I'm thinking, Missouri is done. And it just looked like Missouri just simply could not pick up any of the blitz protections. Nothing. And, man, they ran the football so well. Moscow's 12 for 138 and 3 touchdowns. You talk about getting it done there. And you look at Connor Wegman, made some big throws on possession downs. 18 of 22, 276, no touchdowns. But impressive, efficient showing for Wegman. And we weren't entirely sure he was going to play. And maybe that was part of the difference in the ballgame. You said they prepare kind of like we did. We prepared for Max Johnson last year, which was so incredibly stupid when we knew, we had reason to believe, more than reason enough to understand that Max Johnson wasn't going to play. and we prepare for Max Johnson because we're stubborn and we think we know more than everybody else, at least we did last year. And we go out there and they put Marcel on the field, and we had no clue how to stop him because we had spent the entire week practicing for Max Johnson. That's factual. That's not speculative. It's factual. We got embarrassed. May end up being the best thing for us. Well, Missouri gets embarrassed too. And, you know, maybe that's part of the equation too. Is you got two quarterbacks to prepare for. But Moss kind of quietly having a really big year for A&M. And now you look up, A&M's 5-1. It's like just when you think they're about to slip top 25, they're back. Ole Miss really never appeared stressed in this ball game against South Carolina. I thought that they would be. I thought ultimately Ole Miss would kind of pull away late. But really, Ole Miss comes out, punches him in the mouth, gets up 14-0. Guys, it was 24-3 at halftime. The game was over. It was over. And South Carolina just could not get out of their own way. Turnovers here, big penalties there. And some of that's got to do with Ole Miss, too. Don't get me wrong. This Ole Miss defense has had some good days this year. And some of that's because of the quality of competition. But South Carolina's got some playmakers. I know they had some guys, not 100%. But to put up, you know, to hold a team at home to 3 points, it's impressive. I don't care who it is. Florida and Central Florida, I pick UCF to win the game. Florida does it. And maybe Billy Napier is going to survive for a little bit longer. There were a lot of people that thought if they lost to Mississippi State, he would get fired then. But hadn't been the case. And again, now they're 3-2. And you start looking at this Florida team, and you begin to kind of wonder now. You know, they've now won 3 of the last 4. And so you begin to ask yourself, are they about to right the ship? Well, they got to go to Knoxville this weekend. At home. And Tennessee, probably really frustrated after last week. I won't be surprised to look up, you know, midway through the first half, and Tennessee's up a couple scores. And then Florida hosts Kentucky. Then you get Georgia. And then you get Texas. All right, well, I think they're going to lose 3 of those 4. I think you guys would probably agree with me. Tennessee, Georgia, and Texas, I don't think you would ever favor Florida over those teams in their current situation. Then you've got LSU, Ole Miss, and Florida State. Yeah. I don't see it happening. I don't. I think if you're Florida, you know, you needed to get hot early, because this late October, early November schedule is brutal. It really is. And I just don't think they have the personnel to get it done. So it's going to be awfully interesting to kind of see how that progresses. But, yeah, when you look back, it's been a couple days, so you've had a chance to kind of absorb all this. But what a wild weekend it was. And I think we went 1-5 in our picks against the spread. Yeah. Yeah, but we go right back into it this week. And, you know, that's the thing, too, is like I don't even care about that aspect of it, right? It's just like I love, especially with us having an open date, I love to see chaos in college football when we're not a part of it. And I'm sure you guys kind of feel the same way. I like the unexpected to happen when the bad stuff's not happening to us. And Kirby Smart said on Saturday night, it's going to continue to happen. You know, because the parity in the league is so much better than it was. And the teams are a lot more even than they have been. Wouldn't it be great if we could find a way to add to that chaos? I don't feel it. But you just simply never know what's going to happen. And last weekend is evidence of that. And I think if you're Jeff Lebby, you point to that Alabama-Vanderbilt game. You know, you point to that Arkansas-Tennessee game and say, you know what, hey, anything can happen. You just got to keep working hard and playing hard, doing your part, and we'll see what happens. All right, time for today's Top 10 List. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair's number, let me give it to you now, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Now, Blair 23 years of experience in the mortgage industry, top 1% close ratio in the country, back-to-back-to-back years. Impressive, right? Because he knows how to structure a loan that's more likely to get approved. Get that pre-qualification letter. Go ahead and let him work your numbers up. And say, hey, we have pre-qualified this buyer for a home that, I don't know, it's $200,000, whatever. And that way, when you're out shopping and viewing homes, you're not shopping above your means. Last thing you want to do is get into a home that you can struggle to afford. It's important. Put some roots down somewhere. And maybe life is throwing you a reset, right? Maybe you've got a job transfer. Maybe a relationship change. I don't know your needs, but Blair Chandler can handle you with dignity and professionalism and get you to the closing table when so many others can't. Whether you're looking to refinance, whether you're looking for a game day condo or your first home ever, Blair Chandler is the way to go. That's closewithblair.com. He has closed several loans for Boneyard listeners. Please reach out and kind of let him know what's going on with you. All right, we had a request, and I was a little bit surprised we haven't done this. This gentleman, an iconic member of the R&B/soul community. Very, very sad story in some respects, too. We're talking Otis Redding today. And the thing about Otis Redding that is important to understand, he was an incredibly young guy when he passed away. Maybe you've not done your research, but you hear him sing. And Otis Redding was an old soul. He had a nickname as the King of Soul. And of course, that moniker is assigned to James Brown. But Otis Redding, born in Dawson, Georgia, died in a plane crash at age 26. It's pretty crazy. And even you look at the pictures of him, he looked like a very mature guy. And he sang about some very mature topics. He had lived a lot. And he was a guy, too, that was born to sharecroppers there in Georgia, didn't have a lot of financial resources, began to sing for money at a very young age, went out and sang backup with Little Richard, was involved in a lot of stuff. Booker T and the MGs, the connections to some of the greatest performers of that era. And so we had a request. It's like, hey, they gave us two options. And I checked with Roy, and I says, I believe we've done this band. I don't think we've done Otis Redding. We have not. But sadly, he died December 10th, 1967, and the plane crashed into a lake. It did not explode on impact, and many of the passengers in the plane drowned. And he was out touring with the Barclays, and it's so incredibly tragic when you look back if you haven't done your research here. But so we're going to run through this. We've got one cover in here. And what's interesting, he was with the Stax recording label. And so there were a lot of covers in the Otis Redding catalog and some things that he wrote, original tracks, that have been covered by other people and went on to be incredible hits in the catalogs of others. We're going to start with number 10, Nobody's Fault But Mine. Great track. It's a relationship thing. A lot of it's kind of self-reflective in that respect. It's not the Aerosmith version, but it's not that track. Number 9, the last track on the last album that he recorded prior to his death. It's Old Man Trouble. And you can kind of draw your own conclusions there, he was a guy that kind of creeped a little bit. Number 8, Mr. Pitiful. And at some point, we've all felt that way. No matter your gender or relationship choices in life, at some point, we've all been been heartbroken and kind of gotten down in the dumps, and including your good friend and host, man. I mean, that's part of life, And I'm a firm believer it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. I mean, you've heard that adage your whole life, but love is the most amazing thing. To have somebody choose you and continue to choose you, right? And it's interesting, too, you know, we talk about this social media stuff, and there's a lot of reels out there, a lot of relationship advice out there if you're searching for that. And sometimes even if you're not, it'll cross your timeline, you know. But I read something recently that, you know, makes a lot of sense to me, you know. And it's like, it's kind of like an old pair of shoes, right? And you've got a relationship, you know, it's carrying you where you need to be. And at times those old shoes get a little bit worn, get a little bit dusty, whatever. And all of a sudden you see on social media a brand new pair of shoes. And you're like, hey, I'd rather have those than what I have. And sometimes men, women, people of all walks of life, sometimes when you go out and maybe clean up that old pair of shoes that have been so reliable for you over the years, is to move. All of a sudden you get them cleaned up and get a little polish on them, all of a sudden they look a little bit nicer. You know, the grass isn't always green on the other side. You hear that adage all the time. And of course, you know, the water's greener where you water it. There's some truth in that too, you know. So much of that too, like people, and they want to compare their current relationship to the ideal of another relationship, right? And it's so different too, because we talk about the social media aspect of things. You know, it's like when you've been married for a long time, or you settle into a relationship. I don't mean settle for, I mean settle in to a relationship. And all of a sudden you start paying bills together, and you start saving money together, and you start having dreams together and things like that. Well, that's not as sexy, you know, as that person on social media that always seems to be traveling and meeting famous people. And, you know, you don't realize or recognize what's really going on in their lives. And you think, well, I want that. I don't want to just raise kids and pay bills. And there is more to life than that. But there's a lot more to life that really matters than, you know, just taking a trip to Europe or something. You know, I'd love to be able to do both. But sometimes you got to pick and choose. And sometimes the safer route is to plant some roots with somebody and just kind of begin living life. And let me tell you this, a lot of people will say, you know, and I go back to the great poet laureate Cosmo Kramer, you know, when he had the big discussion with Jerry. He's like, you know, you begin to think to yourself and you ask, is there more to life? I'm here to tell you there isn't, you know, and there's some truth in that. But to compare a brand new relationship with an older relationship where you've kind of settled in, you've kind of learned the nuances of each other, you know, it's about kind of falling in love all over again, you know, and true, you know, what's your word worth? All right, number seven, kind of along those lines, is can't turn you loose. You know, there's been some people that have come in and out of our lives, and you think they're with you, right? They leave, you know, an indelible mark on our hearts and our souls, and it's like, you know what, this is one that got away or whatever. And there are other people, like, no matter what I do, no matter what comes along, I'm going to dance with the one that sprung me. Great track there. Number six, I've been loving you too long. And it's not a negative song, right? It's not, hey, I've been loving you so long, I'm done. The next line in the song is, I've been loving you too long to stop loving you now. It becomes a part of who you are. It's true. Number five, it's a cover song that's, Frank Sinatra had written this. Maybe it was Frank Sinatra. Bing Crosby had covered it. But it's Try a Little Tenderness. And I think the Otis Redding version is the superior version of this song. A lot of people have covered this song. But it's great. Try a Little Tenderness. That's your number five track today. Number four. And you're going to get into some songs now that you know really well. Number four. The Black Crowes made this song famous. A great track on the Shake Your Money Maker album. It was an Otis Redding standard. It's Hard to Handle. And if you listen to the original, it sounds eerily reminiscent, you know, of that Black Crowes song. But they kind of took it and kind of made it their own in some respects. They were true to the original, but it's a little bit different. But Hard to Handle. Maybe you didn't know that was an Otis Redding song. Number three, here's another one. And a lot of people don't know this. And I've touched on this when we've done our cover song list. A lot of people think that Respect from Aretha Franklin is an original song. It is not. That song was written and performed originally by Otis Redding. And if you go back and look at it, it kind of makes sense that it's from the male point of view, considering the time. But there's no denying that Aretha Franklin did an amazing job on that song. It's just not an original song. I'm not being critical of her doing the song. She made it much bigger than it was, right? But that was an Otis Redding song. Number two, and many of you, probably the first time you heard this is when you watched the movie Roadhouse. And it's when Dalton brings the good doctor to his humble abode there, ironically, on Otis's farm. And he's looking through there trying to find some music to listen to, and he settles on the Otis Redding classic, These Arms of Mine. And again, maybe the first time you've ever heard that track, it's amazing. I love it. But number one, and it couldn't be anything else, it's Dock of the Bay. What's interesting about this song is how does a guy from Georgia speak so intelligently about the bay? Well, he'd gone out and he was touring in California. He was part of the Monterey Music Peace Festival in June of 67. I guess that's correct. June of 67. That was the Summer of Love. But they were putting him up in a hotel, and all these fans kept coming by there, and he got no peace. And so he ends up staying in a houseboat. And so he sits out there, and he just kind of pens the song. You know, I sit here and watch the boats roll out, and then I watch them roll again in again. You know, that's what he wrote, that, you know, the bones of that song, floating on a houseboat out there in the bay outside of San Francisco. And he recorded all that about a week before he died. And, you know, kind of some Southern soul, you know, spent a lot of time in Memphis. But what's ironic, too, is, you know, he had gone to Europe and he had covered some Stone stuff. And, you know, Steve Cropper, of course, was a guitar player that was involved with him. And, you know, Steve, of course, had worked with Booker T and those guys. And so the guitar work started changing a little bit because Otis Redding's, you know, personal stylings began to change a little bit. And some of that, of course, you know, he does a great rendition of Satisfaction from the Stones, which, of course, is Mick Jagger and Keith Richards' creation. But if you go back and listen to that final album and even some of the things that were released posthumously, you know, there was a little more rock and roll vibe in it. And a lot of that is because of the time that he spent in Europe. You know, it's like he grew up in the South, and so he kind of was more of a gospel singer in some respects. And so the earlier stuff kind of reflects that. But the more worldly that he became, and the bigger that his circle of influence became, he began to add some different guitar stuff in there. And it was so funny, too. I read an article about Sit on the Dock of the Bay that his wife initially didn't like it. She didn't like it. She didn't like the composition of the song, didn't think it fit him. And ironically, it becomes the biggest hit ever. And it's the first song to ever go number one in posthumous release, the album as well. And again, Otis Redding, an absolute legend and a classic, and a Southern gentleman that had a chance to get out and enjoy some amazing things in life. We kind of talked about some life lessons early on, but you know, when you think about the, you know, Otis Redding, the talents that he had and the humble beginnings that he came from, you know, you begin to think, here we are all these years later and we're still celebrating his music. You know, and not all of us are that talented, but you can outgrow your raising. You can. It's as simple as that. You got to have some gumption about you. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, hit us up on social media. You can find Roy on Twitter or X, and also on Spotify under the handle Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And I'm on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. Hit us up. Let us know. And you never know. We may just use your list. We did have a request, but I didn't have the person's name. But happy to do this. And it's so cool when things pop up and you think, you know what? You know, we don't have to go find a topic or a date or anything like that. We can just, you know, celebrate some incredible music. And, you know, Brent Smith from Shinedown has said more than once that Otis Redding was one of his biggest vocal influences. And on the Smith-Myers EPs that came out, they cover the Dock of the Bay. Pretty incredible, right? Pretty incredible that they've done those things. And I think it's pretty cool, too, that you look back and you think, you know, what an old soul that Otis Redding was, and you look at those pictures of him, and then you realize that he was just 26 years of age. It's incredible to think about, you know, the music that came from that era and how many of those young people were writing and recording some incredible, incredible music. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. You should too if you don't already. You may already have a raving love affair with them. Go by there and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. You'll be glad you did. Campus Bookmart, the best place to buy Mississippi State merchandise, whether you're looking for new apparel, knick-knack items, housewarming gifts, wedding gifts, or maybe just an everyday gift. Don't you love those when somebody just buys you something? It's not your birthday, or it's not Valentine's Day or Father's Day. There's plenty of opportunities to celebrate the people that we love. But man, I tell you what, when you get that unexpected gift, when you're just like, hey, I was just thinking about you and thought you might like this, it's amazing. It's amazing how that makes you feel. You know, just because. I got you this just because I thought you'd like it. And I was thinking of you. How great is that? Why don't you celebrate some of the people you love by getting them some new Mississippi State merchandise from Campus Bookmart? If you can't make it to town, you can visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. I tell you, before we get into this thing too, like we talked about yesterday, you know, I'm a firm believer in looking and shopping and eating locally. And there is one place in town that I always get flowers. It's the same place every single time. And the thing that I have learned about that, you know, it's like about living in Starkville. And I remember having these discussions with some people shortly after I got here. It's like, you know, the thing about living in Starkville, it's like you get your insurance agent, right? Somebody you can count on. You get your banker. And those, you're going to have those everywhere, right? But the people in Starkville truly depend on each other. And I don't mean, you know, we get some game day visitors and things of that nature. But, you know, it's just like, hey, so who? People hit me up all the time. It's like, hey, Steve, we've got, my nephew is in school at State. Can you recommend a mechanic locally? We've got a tire issue. You know, where should I get tires? Well, you know, I can tell you the people that I have come to depend on in Starkville. And every time that I have a high school classmate, of course, Dan and I got started a little younger than most. But I'll see, hey, they're dropping their kid off at Starkville at Mississippi State, and I can see the fear in their eyes. They're excited, but they're worried, right? And I always hit them up and say, hey, Uncle Steve is here, okay? And so if anything goes wrong, if they need anything, you know, where to get a tire fix, where to get an oil change, anything like that, you hit me up, I'll let you know. You know, a lot of that, too, is just to kind of give some reassurance to my friends back home in Columbia, Miss, or wherever they are these days. You know, not everybody settles in the town they grew up in. But I share that because it's one of the things about Starkville that I absolutely love, is if anything pops up in life, I know who to turn to. I know how to get things taken care of, you know. And I can tell you, we opened a new business, you know, and we'd love for you to come float. And it's not just for us, it's for you, right? Of course, we would love your support. But, you know, we had the little fall festival thing over the weekend. Dana went and attended that and talked to a lot of people. We gave a few floats away. It's so amazing to me when a lot of people say, well, it's not what I expected it to be. I didn't expect to feel this way. I didn't expect to feel this good or this relaxed or this, you know, this at peace. And, you know, we've got some people that come that have had chronic pain, you know, that come twice a week. We got one guy that he got injured in Vietnam. And he's had several surgeries. And he goes, this is the only thing that I found to give me some temporary relief. It's a pretty cool thing. And so we hope that people will learn to depend on us come float with us. Whether you're in town for business or whatever, you know, we can accommodate you. 662-268-7601. But I share that because we're so proud to be part of the small business infrastructure in Starkville. I have people all the time that will come in and say, hey, where is there to eat? And I'll start naming off places. I've never heard of that. And I said, well, it's because we don't really support the national chains. We support each other. And there's some special qualities in all that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like when you think about your favorite places in Starkville, chances are it's owned and operated by another Mississippi State person. You know, it may be somebody you went to college with. But, you know, how many times have we talked about, you know, hey, yeah, we could stop at any number of places on our way into Starkville and buy some Mississippi State merchandise. But we don't, because we want to take care of Starkville. That's an important aspect of it. That's one of the things I always tell people. Please don't go to Amazon or eBay to buy Mississippi State stuff. You know, buy your Mississippi State stuff here at Mississippi State, you know, in our community. And there's just something special about that too. You know, I have so many people that say they love giving back, you know, to Starkville. That's an important aspect of things for me. You know, I love living here. I do. I absolutely love, not just because it's convenient for work. The people here are just outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. And so, you know, maybe you're looking to relocate at some point or retire, you know. I don't want too many of you to come because I don't want to have to wait for a table, you know. But it's an amazing place. I mean, it truly is. And not just on game day. You know, it's just so much that happens, you know, Monday through Friday when you guys aren't around that makes Starkville a very special place. We're not a perfect place by any stretch. You know, we're not. You know, we got a lot of things we got to do better. But there is a spirit of community here that I don't know that I've ever experienced in my lifetime, no matter where I've lived. There's just a spirit of community. And I think that's one of the things that makes Mississippi State so special is because of where it's located and kind of the values of the people that live here. So let's move ahead here. I didn't plan to talk about all that, but sometimes it happens. But we had a chance to visit with Jeff Lebby yesterday. Press conference went about 10 minutes. Of course, we didn't have a game to recap. And I don't like doing that on Monday anyway, other than his review of the tape. You know, I think if you want to talk to coach about the games that took place on Saturday, then go to the games on Saturday, and then you can speak to him Saturday after the game. Of course, there's always some review, right? Coach, now that you've had a chance to watch the tape, you know, how did things go? I mean, and you're not going to get, you know, a great answer, but it's one of those things you have to ask about. It's because of the fact you never know, something may pop up that, you know, because we don't know assignments, right? There's some that we don't know play calls. And that's one of the things that I always see people that get a little bent out of shape. Like, I didn't like our play call there. You know, a lot of times you don't know exactly what the play was. And maybe a guy didn't execute there, you know. One of the things that we did talk about was injuries a little bit. And I get the sense from asking Coach about that is he is just going to rely on this SEC availability report. You know, there's not going to be the big Monday injury report that some other teams do. I think everybody's kind of skewing towards that. And as I shared, you know, last week, I think Ole Miss is probably putting the most detailed availability report out there. And so what happens kind of moving forward? You know, does everybody kind of do it the way they do it, or they kind of do it the way everybody else does? But I can respect it. But one of the things that I asked Coach is, you know, how optimistic are you about getting some guys back on the field? These would be a couple of guys we hope to get back this week. But if we release the injury report on Wednesday night, some more things will come to light. We do expect Isaac Smith to play this week. And I was told he could have played last week or 2 weeks ago. He did travel and he did go through workouts, but he did not play. We do expect to have him back. And, you know, 2 weeks. And, you know, again, there was some family social media postings shortly after he got injured because people were concerned, right? And his mom had went to social media and said, hey, you know, yeah, he's fine. You know, we're just going to go through a couple tests, you know, make sure that everything's good. But I have seen Isaac around town multiple times here. Saw him at the soccer game Friday night, him and his dog, walking around talking to fans. And it was so great. We had so many of our student athletes and coaches from other sports that turned out to support soccer. But yeah, Isaac's moving around good. Went to eat the other day, saw him. He's out moving around. And, you know, we'll see about, you know, KBG, you know, Jay, Kedrick Bingley-Jones. You know, we're going to need some help stopping this Georgia running game. And so we'll see what happens there. But, again, we'll be watching that really closely. There'll be the initial report. Of course, there's also on Wednesday, there is the SEC teleconference. And then there is the, you know, Dog Talk show. So there'll be two opportunities to hear from Jeff Lebby on Wednesday. And, again, they will update that report throughout the week. And, again, I've become a fan of it. I wasn't sure, you know. I think you just kind of prepare. I mean, how many times as kids and we go play the ball game – everybody was a game-time decision, right, unless there was a broken bone or something. But, you know, things have changed a little bit. But Lebby did speak, but we're optimistic about getting a couple guys back. And maybe that's me paraphrasing kind of his words there. But I think it is pretty safe to say that we're going to be in much better shape than we were at Texas because we've had the benefit of the open date. And that's one of the things that Coach kind of asked about too, you know, is, you know, now that you've gotten through there, you know, how do you feel, you know? And Coach says we needed it from a health standpoint, but just to refocus and recalibrate and get the guys a little bit of a break that was needed and get us back in the building with great energy and thankful for the opportunity and grateful for what we have ahead of us. We have a challenge on Saturday, but our guys are excited about it. And why wouldn't they be? Right? You get a chance to play college athletics, but also in addition to that, too, you know, I think in many respects, the loss at Texas, I think in many respects, it's like if we just hold the rope here, we've got a chance, right? We got a chance to do something here. And maybe not so much this year, but after seeing what happened over the weekend, I think there is some room for optimism that we're going to win some more games this year. And not picking State to go to Athens and win. We've only done that a handful of times. But, you know, my point in all of that is I think the open date comes at a good time, too. And the players see that. They're thinking, you know what, hey, we could do that, too. On the other side of the ledger, Kirby Smart, I hate to use the phrase that he kind of called out the fans, but he kind of called out the fans. And he clarified a little bit on Monday, but he didn't back down from it. You know, he said, I said what I said, and I stand by what I said. You know, on Saturday, he felt like, you know, when Auburn was kind of making a little bit of a run in that game, that he felt like the fans just really weren't engaged. And he goes, you know, we have to make this a difficult place to play. It used to be. And he says, you know, on Monday, he goes, you know, it was a reporter, and I'm going to see if I can find the actual question. Hang on just 1 second. And I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but it was basically, it was like, you know, does the crowd need to cheer more or does your team need to give them more to cheer about, right? And that sounds like it's straight off a message board, straight off of Twitter. And I thought Kirby handled it well. And Kirby, you could tell he was a little bit perturbed. And he's like, no, we're a team, okay? It's not us against them. And that's kind of how it came off, right? And maybe the question wasn't phrased as well as it should have been, but the reality of it is that there needs to be an esprit de corps, not just at Georgia, but certainly at Starkville. You know, we all got to pull in the same direction. You know, I remember in the days after Coach Leach died. I mean, you know, we had everybody in the country kind of reaching out to all of us and saying, you know, hey. Our thoughts and prayers are with you all. And I felt in some respects that we were united. And then, you know, we ultimately elect to promote Zach Arnett. And even those that were kind of critical of the move, we said, well, you know what, we got to make the best of this. You know, I don't know all the thinking behind this, but hey, I hope he works out well. And there were a lot of people too, some very animated discussions were like, you know what, our only choice is to kind of get behind him. And it didn't work out. you know, it didn't work out. And I really thought, to be honest with you, I thought, as intelligent as Zach is, I thought, you know what, hey, he's got a chance. He's going to be a head coach at some point. And he's obviously, you know, kind of getting escalated and elevated here, probably perhaps before he's ready, but we got a veteran roster. Maybe it'll be okay. Well, it wasn't okay. And again, I go back to that A&M thing. I mean, it's just, you know, that just absolutely drives me crazy. You know, and I had even shared some information with the staff. I was like, hey, Max Johnson's not playing. And apparently they knew more than us. So they spent the entire week expecting. And Zach even said, I expect Mac Johnson to be out there. You know, said it publicly. And so, you know, discretion's a better part of valor, and sometimes being willing to listen is a better part of confidence, right? You got to be confident enough to accept outside information at times. But the reality of it is this, is, you know, this whole thing this year, you know, we're not making a coaching change, period. And so what are our alternatives, right? Well, I think we unite behind the banner that has unified us for years, and that is the dependent of the Mississippi State Bulldogs. And I can't promise you it's going to be you know, a great second half of the year. When you start looking at these things, you know, let's just kind of say it for what it is. It, you know, as well as we played, you know, everybody that we've got left on our schedule, with rare exceptions, playing better football than us. Not to say that we can't pick somebody off, have a good weekend, and kind of rally around Michael Van Buren, but these games aren't played on paper, just like last weekend's games weren't played on paper. You know, something great could happen. You know, I remember, you know, way back in 2009, feels like yesterday and forever at the same time, you know, how much better we felt down the stretch. And ultimately, we beat Ole Miss, cost them a shot at the Capital One Bowl. And we had a lot of momentum heading the next year. My hope is we can do something similar this year. You know, find a way to have some measure of success. You get through this stretch with Georgia, and you got A&M coming here. And again, A&M's playing good football. A&M's 5-1. Are they a team that's capable of doing some great things this year? I don't know that I agree with that. Is that a winnable game for us? I'd felt a whole lot better about it if we didn't have, you know, Texas and Georgia back-to-back. At least we had the open date between them. But I wouldn't say that's a certain loss. Arkansas coming in here the next week. I wouldn't say that's a certain loss. Especially when you look at the quarterback situation. What's it going to look like by then? We talked about that early in the year. When you run him as much as they do, yeah, UMass coming in here. You know, then we got to go to Tennessee, and then we get Missouri in here, and then we got to go to Oxford. And so, again, if you look at those games on paper, outside of the UMass game, nobody's going to be expecting us to win any of those games. That's a tough thing because we put so much emotional energy in this. We love Mississippi State. We want Mississippi State to play well. We want Mississippi State to win substantial games and do amazing things. I think we just got to take it a week at a time, right? We were not playing the Egg Bowl this week. And you never know what shape those two teams are going to be in by the time we get there. You never know. How many times have we been through this? You just never know. Yeah. Am I calling for a win in the Egg Bowl? No, I'm not. Not based on where it stands today. But I can tell you we've been in some situations before. We put together some good years late that gave us a ramp into the next year. Yeah, just like we did in 96. You know, a lot of people wanted Jackie Sherrill fired. 2013 with Dan Mullen. You know, Jeff Lebby's not going anywhere. Okay, and so I think, you know, we don't really have any choice but to kind of link arms here and kind of fight this thing together. And yeah, you know, we've had some recruiting situations that have popped up here in the last couple days. You know, that goes along with losing. You know, because it's about confidence, right? And listen, there are a lot of kids out there that commit early and all of a sudden they lose their hype and they find out this friend's taking this visit and they're like, hey, I feel like I'm missing out on something, you know. But the reality of it is there's a lot of people out there that look at this and they say, you know what, hey, I just don't have a lot of confidence in that staff is going to be able to turn this thing around. And, the Mario Nash thing pops up yesterday, and, you know, and I'm like, so Florida State's in a better situation than us? You know, goodness, Mike Alford may have to make a change there. Yeah, he's probably safe this year, but goodness gracious. I mean, you know, and here's the thing that I'll tell you about the whole situation in Florida State. You know, Mike Norvell was a guy, was a hot name, right? Everybody knew it. But it's kind of like the Billy Napier thing. They're kind of like peas from the same pod. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you cut your college recruiting teeth in the G5, sometimes your evaluation skills are kind of stuck to where you've come from. And all of a sudden you look at the situation at Florida State, and I don't know if you've paid attention to that. You know, last year everybody thought, you know, Florida State, you know, the one team left out of the playoff and it wasn't fair. And, you know, you can make a case for every bit of that, you know. I mean, they played the games that were, ahead of them. And it didn't work out. But, you know, it's so nuts when you look at it now, you know, what difference a year makes, right? And so, guys, Florida State is 1-5. Have you kept up with that at all? You know, their lone win was a 14-9 win over Cal. So you weren't even impressive there. And you look at these offensive numbers, they're not good. You know, and so that's the thing that I think about is like, yeah, Mario Nash has got to do what he thinks is best for him. I'm not going to judge him, not going to judge his family, whatever. But the reality of it is, if you think that the situation in Florida State's better than it is at Mississippi State, you're kidding yourself. And I would venture to say if Mike Norvell doesn't have a big year next year, he's finished. I don't think there's any question about it. He's finished. He'll get a nice payday and he'll, you know, ride off into the sunset, maybe get a job as a QC analyst somewhere. I don't know, maybe coach high school football. I don't know what Mike will do, but I know this. People at Florida State are not very patient. And you say, you know, what have you done for me lately? Well, last year you had an amazing year. And then you didn't make the playoff, and a lot of people opted out, and you got embarrassed in a ball game. Okay, nobody holds that against him. But, you know, this is a roster that you've constructed, and it's a roster that can't score points. And then you've got, you know, you're off this week, and you're on the road at Duke, on the road at Miami, and then North Carolina comes in, and you're at Notre Dame, you get Charleston Southern, and then you get the rivalry game against Florida. And, you know, it's like you begin to look at this. There's no way out of this mess this year for Florida State. So, I mean, people are going to do what they want to do for what they want, the reasons they want to do them for. But one of the things that I'm not going to, you know, listen to is the fact that some people would say, well, you know, Steve, it's Florida State. Yeah, it's not the Bobby Bowden Florida State. Okay, it's not the Deion Sanders, the Peter Warrick, the Peter Tom Willis Florida State. It's not the Charlie Ward Florida State. That program's in trouble. And so, no, I'm not going to say, well, you know, I kind of understand. No, there's no understanding that, you know. And if this is an NIL situation, we got to fix it. But, you know, to each their own, everybody's got to do their situation. But I'm not going to sit here and listen to somebody say, well, I get it, man, it's Florida State. You know, yeah. Yeah, it's true. It is Florida State. The logo matters. You know, the coaching staff's stability matters too. And not to mention, can you imagine the calls that Mike Alford's getting right now? You know, that's the thing that I think about when we look in, you know, at the Mike Norvell situation. You know, the full experience, right? And that was the thing when they hired him. It was kind of like when they hired Napier. And to be fair about that, yeah, Mike Norvell probably had a little bit of a better pedigree. I think if we're all, you know, honest with ourselves, probably the case, you know. But, you know, of course, you know, Willie Taggart, they had hired him, and he was going to be this wunderkind recruiter, and it didn't work out. But, you know, let's look at the totality of things. Norvell's first year was 2020. It's not fair to judge anybody on that, but 3-6. 2021, 5-7. And then all of a sudden in 22, They gained some life there. End up ranked 10th in the country, finished the year 10-3. And then last year, of course, they go 13-1. And the long loss, of course, is in the Orange Bowl. They finished ranked 6th in the country and say, okay, we're back. And now you're 1-5 and you're staring 3-9 right in the face. And so you look at the totality of the Mike Norvell era in Tallahassee. And again, you got to be fair about 2020. But this has not been a good run. I mean, let's be honest. 10 wins at Florida State. It's not a great year. They went 9-3 in a regular season. And then they win their bowl game. You know, so it's not like that they were just in contention for some major things. They didn't even win the conference that year. And so you have the one shining moment, and you follow that up with this. And, I think that there's going to be some interesting conversations that have to take place. And I think this year's offseason is going to be absolutely wild, especially if you start thinking about, you know, Florida could and should come open this year. You know, what does Florida State do? I don't think there's any way they fire him after the year that he had last year. I mean, you think this one year removed from back-to-back double-digit win seasons. But when you begin to look around the landscape of college football, how many people will say, you know what, if we're going to have to do it next year, let's do it now? You know, what happens at Auburn? What happens at Arkansas? I don't know that 6-6 is enough for Sam to get saved. And we've talked about that. We had a discussion on the jeanspage.com message board, True Maroon board. And there's some people that think 6-6 is enough. I don't think so. I think 7-5 is. I don't think 6-6 will get it done. There were a lot of people last year. You remember, a lot of it was financial last year. It wasn't just because they love Sam. And I love Sam. I think Sam's great. It's fun to do press conferences when Sam's speaking because he's just so forthright about stuff. He doesn't try to wow you with his command of the English language. He just kind of tells you the truth. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you're looking to come to Starkville for business, for pleasure, look no further than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you Google, you're going to see their Facebook page pop up. You can look through the pictures of all the amenities that are available to you and your guest. That great back porch area, I can't oversell that. The full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the fire pit area, starting to turn cooler. Good time to build a fire. It's a lot of fun. You make yourself some s'mores. It's cool. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, conveniently located just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. How great is that? You can do your tailgating right there and not have to drag all your stuff to campus and then drag it back and deal with all the traffic and the barricades and things like that. You can just have a great game day experience. Or maybe you're bringing a work group to town. And maybe you're going to be kind of filtered throughout the Golden Triangle area. It's a great place to stay. You won't have to worry where Bob is, right? I love the place. Some friends of mine used it a while back. Got a chance to go visit with them. Pretty impressive. It is. Now, when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to be available to you. You can go Airbnb or VRBO if that's your thing. But if you book through the Evolve website, I can save you some money. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson 10, the number 10, and you get 10% off your stay. You know, I'm a firm believer in promo codes. If it's free, it's me, right? Anytime that I can save some money, I work hard for my money. I don't want to give it away. So we're going to give you some incentive to book through Evolve. 10% off, right? The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle area. Okay, we're still working through these baseball scrimmages. And there are some position battles that I think you guys should be aware of. You know, I think at catcher, that's an interesting part of it. You know, what's going to happen at catcher? Ross Highfield, of course, still working back, and he's in good shape. They're going to be careful with him this fall, and they have been. You know, I think Ross is a guy that I still believe is a day two draft pick. And I think that he is going to be a real dude for us this year. I mean, just imagine if we'd had him last year. You know, his freshman year, he hit almost 10 bombs, right? And so you start thinking about adding him to the lineup. Be pretty impressive. Now, Jackson Owens has been really good offensively. defensively, pretty good behind the plate, controlling the running game, maybe not quite so much. Joe Powell, of course, very reliable guy, probably your number two. And so I feel like we've got some capable guys there. Ross, I think, is the better offensive player. Of course, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to sneeze at what Jackson Owens done in fall ball at the plate. Got to find a way to get him in there somehow, too. But we have some depth, and that's something we didn't have last year. I mean, how many times last year did we have a guy kind of struggle a little bit? We couldn't afford to sit him because we just didn't have the depth. We got depth this year. So the catcher position, again, still something that we'll kind of work through, but I think, again, it's Ross's job to lose when you look at the true potential. But he hadn't done a whole lot this fall. And we'll see what he looks like, you know, we get back after the break. I feel pretty confident that Ace Reese is going to be your third baseman. I think he has been everything we've expected and then some. Dylan Cup, not playing defensively and not running out his hits, but on Sunday he was 3-for-3 with two doubles and a single, a couple of ribbies too. Sawyer Reeves doing a good job over there too. It's going to be interesting to see how this middle infield spot stack up. I think the battle for second base is one of the more intriguing spots. Ethan Pulliam is a guy, of course, that's still working with football, working some with baseball. So he hadn't been out there maybe as much, maybe getting the at-bats some other guys have. Nate Chester's worked some over there. And in addition to that, Gatlin Sanders, the transfer, has been really, really good as of late. He was 2-for-2 with a walk on Sunday and had a double yesterday, another big day yesterday. This is a guy, too, you know, a Bulldog legacy, as you guys are well aware. And so I think those middle infield spots, you know, how many times last year did we not have middle infielders that that we could work on? I mean, you know, Dave Marchand, of course, we were at our best when Dylan Cup and Dave Marchand were the middle infielders. And then Cup gets hurt. Marchand goes over to short. And then we try a few people. Pulliam ends up getting the job. Imani Larry goes to DH. We probably our best lineup when Imani was DHing. This year it's much different. Lucas Buckner, of course, has come in and done some really good things for a freshman. I'm impressed. And he was a guy that I wasn't expecting a lot from. But you have some depth pieces in the middle infield that didn't exist last year. I mean, last year, basically, you had, down the stretch, you had three guys to work with. You had Imani, you had Pulliam, and you had Dave Marchand. You did not have anybody beyond that. You're going to have that this year. You know, first base, Hunter Hines and Reed Stallman, both those guys have done some big things. Pretty excited about what they can bring to the table. And Stallman's also worked out there and left, and that's going to be interesting too. I think right now, the only outfield spot that I would say is probably settled is Nolan Stevens in right. And he's going to pitch some two. Who's going to play left? Aaron Downs has played some out there. Reed Stallman's played some out there. And Stallman's a guy that can run around a little bit, but he's not maybe a natural outfielder. And if you've got a guy like that, left field is where you'd probably put him. Bryce Chance has been, he and Aaron Downs have kind of been competing out there in center. Michael O'Brien, too. And Mike, of course, had a bit of a tweak here recently, just kind of getting back to action. And Michael O'Brien is arguably our best defensive outfielder at all three spots. And so you saw sometimes last year he would be inserted into the game late as a defensive replacement and you know, nearly robbed a home run last year in a ball game that was huge for us. But, yeah, those are some things that will kind of get settled out here. But my honest opinion is what I suspect that we're going to do is we're going to be a team that prioritizes offense. I think we're going to find our best nine offensive players, and we're going to find a place for them to play. And you start thinking about, you know, left-handed power. You know, we didn't have a lot of that last year outside of Hunter Hines. Of course, you know, you had, you know, Hyzak good from the right side, you know, and then you had, you know, some other guys that we were expecting some big things from. But outside of DJ and Hunter, we kind of went as they went. I think there's just simply more depth in this order. And I had a scout tell me recently that Ace Reese is probably a day two guy right now. But he's still 2 years away from being draft eligible. Yeah. So think about that for a second, you know. And Ace is a guy that's been really, really consistent. I think Sawyer Reeves has looked good too. But I think the main thing is we're going to be able to score some runs. So now the question becomes is, you know, how do we solidify this pitching staff? Now, we have pieces, and I think we've got some young pieces that are very intriguing. Charlie Foster continues to do really, really well. Is he a Sunday guy for us, or is he a Tuesday guy for us? I guess, you know, we'll see as we get a little bit closer. I'm concerned a little bit about his size. You know, now he'll look a little bit different by the time February gets here. But how many times have we seen these freshman guys come in and it kind of hit the wall late? I mean, we saw it with Jackson Fristo. We saw it with some others. But he's a guy that can help us. Duke Stone doesn't get a lot of notoriety, but every time he goes out there, the guys throw strikes. I think we had this discussion earlier. You know, we didn't expect to get Carson Ligon back. He turned down some money to come back. Pico was back. Now, on Sunday, Pico struggled a little bit with control in the first inning. In the second inning, he was great. That's one thing that people bring up. It's, but, Steve, you know, are you worried about pitching? No, I'm not worried about pitching. But in addition to that, I'll tell you why. Like Pico didn't have a great first inning but didn't give up a hit. Second inning, he was outstanding. Well, in a regular game, he's going to ride for probably 3 to 4 more innings. But in a fall ball scrimmage, no, we're not going to go more than 2 innings with him. We're going to pull him, and we're going to let some other guys pitch because we got to find out who we can trust. It's not about winning a fall ball scrimmage. You know, it's about getting work for these guys. And so it's not a game-type situation, though it is a, quote, scrimmage game. But the pitchers, they're on pitch counts or certain things they're working on. Some of these guys are refining their technique a little bit, kind of changing their grip a little bit. And in addition to that, too, there are guys that sometimes maybe looking to add a pitch. And so you can't get too crazy about fall ball. You can get excited about, you know, scoring some runs. You can get excited about playing good defense. But, no, I'm not worried about pitching because I think Justin Parker is involved. And, of course, you know, maybe you missed it, but State got the number 11 player in the country to commit for the 2026 class over the weekend, Wilson Anderson. A kid from Tampa, Florida, had offers from everybody and picks Mississippi State over Florida in his final two. So you get a Florida kid that has connections to the University of Florida that picked Justin Parker over Kevin O'Sullivan. That's a pretty big endorsement for your pitching coach and this program. And I think Justin Parker is going to be a head coach. I think he can be a very successful head coach. And he's a guy that really pushes the guys, too. And some people don't like it. They get a little bit uncomfortable. And I think you go out and you recruit guys that want to get better. And I look at the job that he did last year, you know, with Nate Dolm. And, goodness, man, where would we be if Nate had been healthy, you know? And that's not a criticism of Nate. I love Nate. I've been a Nate guy from the beginning. Saw him Friday night. He's back in town, he and his girlfriend, and at the soccer game. You know, how cool was that, right? But you look at what we did with Cal Steven. You look at what we did last year with Tyson Harden. I mean, some guys that really no big people expected big things from. And then you look down the stretch, and we were as competitive as anybody on the mound. We just needed some guys on the back end. We haven't seen Mekhi Grant pitch yet. He's going to be a guy that could factor into your weekend. But we're not going to go out there and stress these guys in the fall and put ourselves in a situation that we're having to kind of nurse our way through injuries in the early part of the season. It's about being healthy when the season begins. And there are some guys out there, who we mentioned, you know, Dylan Cupp, Michael Bryan's been a little bit gimpy as of late. Ross Highfield, we know his situation. Got to be careful with him. He's working on the back end of his throwing program right now. But, you know, we cover these games pretty much exclusively. And Mike Nemeth had a good write-up yesterday. But, again, I think it's important not to get too high or too low. And as Lamona said when we had the media day with him, it's like, you know, when the hitting's good, you wonder how good the pitching is. And then when the pitching's good, you wonder about your offense. I think what you want to see is the pitching win one day and the hitting win the next. And that way you feel like they're being competitive and things are kind of getting done. And so, I'm optimistic. This time last year, I was cautiously optimistic. I'm optimistic about this team. I think we're very much in a situation that we're going to be able to go out and win some games. And I think we'll be in a position to host. I mean, just yesterday, you know, the game yesterday, the inter-squad was 6-3. You know, so that's, you know, it ends up being a 5-inning game. You know, so the numbers are somewhat skewed there. But I really like these young guys. I really do. I like Braden Booth, Duke Stone, Charlie Foster, Lucas Buckner. Landis Davila hit a monster shot on Sunday. It was absolutely ridiculous how quickly he turned on that. And so, again, I'm excited about the group. I'm excited about the future. I think it's going to be a really good year. But it's going to go like everybody else. It's going to go as far as our pitching will take us. But it's so interesting, too. A lot of people are like, you know, we're the only people in this situation. No, we're not. Outside of Texas A&M, just about everybody is kind of figuring this thing out just as we are. I mean, you look at Arkansas. They lose their entire rotation. Maybe you've forgotten about that, right? You know, Hagan Smith, you know, Brady Tigard, Mason Molina, all those guys are gone. You know, and so everybody in baseball right now in a Southeastern Conference, with the exception of Texas A&M, is kind of figuring this thing out. LSU loses a lot pitching-wise, but they've gotten some guys back from injury. And so if you're a fan of the game, you kind of understand this is how things are going to be year to year to year. And who can get their portal guys up to speed and contributing is a team that's going to win and win big. And so, you know, I think we've had a good portal class. And, it's, again, there's a lot of people out there that don't know anything about the players that go in the portal until they go in the portal. And they go dig up their stats and say, hey, this guy's great. And then when you dig a little bit deeper, you begin to realize that, you know, they did most of their damage against non-conference opponents. And they weren't even great in their league. And so there's an aspect of that, too. Not all production is created equal. So, hey, let's get out of here. If you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. We're about a week away from those books being shipped to the warehouse. And then they'll be distributed out to everybody that's already ordered. And, of course, everything ordered through the website is signed. All of my sports titles are there. And When the Bottom Falls is there, too. So if you're a person that likes to read a good comeback story, or you're a person that has struggled with substance abuse, or know somebody that has, or somebody that's in recovery that could use some encouragement, I encourage you to pick that book up, too. That's dutynoblebook.com. Let's get out of here. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.